You're listening to Eye on the Valley with Surjeet and Allie. I'm Allie Laube, and you just heard our conversation with Katerina Anastasiadis, Executive Director for the Abbotsford Chamber of Commerce. Next, more specialist takes on the Valley, this time coming from political science instructor Ron Dart. Ron was on staff with Amnesty International before he joined UFE in 1990. He specializes in Canadian politics, nationalism, and literature, as well as international relations, human rights, and religions. Here's what he had to say about the Valley's economic and political climate heading into 2021.
Thank you for joining us, sir.
Oh, no problem.
I do quickly want to ask you about your experience with living in the Valley. Have you been in the Valley for your whole life?
No, I grew up in Toronto, moved out here. I was on staff with Amnesty International. I was the regional director in the 1980s, moved out here with family late 1980s. So I've been here since 1989, and I started working at what was then Fraser Valley College in the political science department in 1990.
Yeah, and that's where me and Ron met. I took several courses with him. A student in political science. So
cool, very interesting. That's why I want to ask you about voter priorities in the Valley. I imagine it's something that you're quite familiar with, but for people who aren't living in the Fraser Valley, how would you describe what you anticipate voter priorities will be in this upcoming election?
Well, I would think the central upper Fraser Valley has consistently voted on the political right federally, which was historically the progressive conservative, but when it split under the Reform Alliance that then Harper brought into being, they tend to vote right of center. And provincially, of course, the right of center party is the Liberals in the Fraser Valley. So the particular demos or the people or the constellation in the Valley tends to be dominated by either a soft right of center or a strong right of center, very business driven, lighter state, lighter taxes, as little government intervention as possible, liberty and freedom is prioritized. And so you pretty well can predict the results in the central upper Fraser Valley, that it will be a liberal sweep. That's pretty consistent. Most people in the central Fraser Valley are very political, but political on the right. And so whether it's walk-in polls or mail-in or a variety of options, they really take their public responsibility, their civic responsibility seriously. How they translate that into right of center politics is, of course, what defines the central upper Fraser Valley.
Ron, could you explain what you mean when you say center right? How does that manifest in the Valley?
Well, at a political level, the way it manifests itself, and then there's the issues which, of course, underlie that political level. But at a political level, it's a consistent vote for the Conservative Party federally in this area. I mean, there's a fringe Heritage Party, Christian Heritage Party, but they won't go anywhere. But there is that very small percentage, just as like there's a small percentage of Greens on the left, just as on the Heritage on the right. So federally, with, as I mentioned earlier, the dissolution of the Progressive Conservative Party and the swing further to the right than the Progressive Conservatives ever were, following an Albertan tradition of the Ernest Manning, Preston Manning, Stockwell Day, and then Stephen Harper, who moved from Ontario to Alberta, and the whole Calgary School of Political Science. At a federal level, it's always right of center. And when that gets translated into economic issues, and there's social issues there as well, there's ecological issues there. I mean, there's 10 or 12 issues which are hot button issues in the culture wars. But at a federal level, it will always swing conservative. At a provincial level, it will swing liberal, because liberals are just the provincial version of the federal conservatives in that sense.
Right. That makes sense. I do want to, again, bring it quickly back to this public desire for more public transit infrastructure in the Valley. What do you think is the feasibility of this actually happening? Because it has been in talks for a very long time.
Yes, there's a long history. I mean, there's actually not only a long history, there actually was transportation out here at one point. So there are some people who are arguing that why can't we return to what once was? If you want to go forward with alternate transportation, how do you increase population density in an area? So the two work together, because it's one thing to have transportation coming out here regardless of the means, but if you have light population, it gets to be very expensive to be doing that. Whereas if you have high population density, then there's the money to pay for the infrastructure, to pay for people going back and forth. And so it's a balance. It's a difficult one. And I would think Liberals, NDP and Greens would, if possible, want to move forward in that. But then there's the economic element as well that has to be factored in. How much debt does the government go in to do that? And how much higher do you have to raise the taxes to afford something like that? And when you get a political constituency that wants lighter taxes, lighter government, and yet you want a transportation infrastructure which is going to cost more, hence greater state involvement, greater taxes, most will vote for the same as status quo, regardless of its impact on global warming and pollution.
Mm. Yeah, something that I've noticed, a lot of people who seem to support the idea of more infrastructure in rural parts of the Valley are people who actually work in different cities, or live in different cities and have to commute to these places for work. So potentially the people who are really supporting it aren't even in the correct riding to be able to influence these projects, at least on a municipal level. Is that accurate to say that that's a barrier?
Yeah, because you tend to those many who are for it, as you say, have moved out from the city because it's much cheaper to live out here than in Vancouver. The problem is many of the, I mean, they're growing out here, you know, Abbotsford, Chilliwack, Agassiz, Yarrow, and many of these places are growing, but it's going to take another generation or so to have enough people to legitimate a high expenditure from the government to build alternate transportation. I mean, they've done the one obviously out to Mission, but the bulk of the population, the Valley, lives on the other side of the river, not Mission. And so the Abbotsford, Chilliwack, Hope, you know, Yellow Brick Road, as it were, is the sort of the position that many people here would want this alternate form of transportation, because that's where the bulk of the population lives, not across the river. Because on the one hand, you have environmental issues. You want to look at forms of energy that are not polluting. On the other hand, any government has to look at what's the cost of that and who's going to be paying. And if you have a right of center constituency, they don't want to be paying higher taxes, and they're willing to subordinate ecology for economics. If you're a little more left of center, you're trying to live the balance in a little more delicate and difficult way, and saying, listen, if you just think long term, there's going to be disaster. Or if you just think short term, there's going to be disaster long term. And so a lot of it depends on politicians. Are they just thinking they're short term in office, but not thinking long term? And environment is obviously one of those top five issues we face. How is the best way to go about that, given the accelerated growth in the Central Upper Valley? And so obviously Mike de Jong is going to go one direction on that. The Greens and the NDP will go another. But because we tend to lean right here, the tendency is to think short-term profit, but not long-term sustainability.
Because the NDP has seats in Surrey and stuff, there's things that the Liberal Party says that NDP doesn't care about the Fraser Valley because they don't get the three ridings here. They're going to care more, develop more in Surrey and those kind of things. Do you think politics plays a role in what the NDP develops in the Fraser Valley when they're in government?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's always in politics the idealism of what a party stands for. Then given the fact they have limited time, energy, and finances, where they're going to focus it. And if you think you're going to get more votes in a certain area that's going to give you a majority in Victoria, and you assist in building projects in those areas, you're likely to get more votes. Then why would you focus on the central Upper Fraser Valley when you're consistently defeated? And then in other ridings where you know you have a better chance of winning.
I want to talk about ICBC. We talked about basically who's to blame for the ICBC mess. Now, as a political science instructor, what's your opinion on that?
Yes.
Well, first of all, you're always going to get one party blame another for a mess. So that's a given. And of course, Mike will inevitably do that. And he's going to argue the case that under the Liberal regime, of which he played a very, very important role, there was a balanced budget and credit ratings were at a very high level. And so they should have their, you know, their backs padded and have little medals on their chest for what they accomplished. And he's right. He's right in saying that the Liberal Party, to some degree, played a very important role in dealing with ICBC, and given its historic problems, because it has had historic problems and nobody's going to deny that. I think perhaps he was a little skewed and excessively blaming ICBC in terms of what he sees as its contemporary malaise. There are many factors at work in ICBC's malaise other than just blaming a political party. I think if you wanted an honest assessment of the two parties in ICBC, you'd have to sit down and do a hard, chestnut cracking of the facts and figures and how the NDP read what was done in ICB under the Liberals beyond Mike's glowing report. And then you'd have to get NDP talking back to Liberals and say, well, perhaps you're cherry picking with the facts here and what we've been trying to do and what we've accomplished. And if we had gaffes, yeah, we have, but so did you when you were in power. So let's not go whistleblowing in terms of your own virtues and our excessive vices. And so I think an honest discussion on ICBC would be to bring two members of both parties together and get both to discuss both the positive they had contributed to ICBC, but also equally their gaffes, their inadequacies. And so that way you would move forward. But when people have both cannons loaded and constantly shoot at one another, you'd only go so far in meaningful public discourses. For some, politics is an analogy to a sports game. And when you're in the Stanley Cup, or when you're in the Grey Cup, emotions are high, they're intense, and there's two teams. And the danger always is in politics, I mean, we can just follow what's happening across the border. Idealize your own view, you demonize someone else, and that just, it minimizes the importance of public life. And so, of course, Mike is going to be intense and emotional, but so will people be in the NDP and the Greens. And so, as they should be, these are important issues. I mean, not to be engaged emotionally is to be less than human, but to be engaged emotionally in which facts are lined up in a certain direction and others are ignored, that's not healthy for the common good of a province or for a country or for a global economy either. And that's sometimes the downside of partisan politics, is we select information that suits our ideology, and what doesn't fit into that Procrustean bed, we simply ignore those facts. And that's why you need good people from both parties to come together to have a much more mature discussion, in this case, obviously, ICBC.
Yeah, and if I may just end up by saying this, I think even though they're partisan at this moment, but when it came to the COVID crisis, for say, they put their ideology aside and work together. So that's a positive sign.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, because when you have a crisis and a tyranny of an urgent issue, the best women and men in all parties will bracket their ideological clashes, their caricaturing, and say, we're here to serve the people. Now, something like COVID is serious. And so how do these people from different parties come together momentarily for the common weal or the common good of people in this province? And to many, Mike and many in the Liberal Party, the Greens, they've had their ongoing criticisms of way it could be handled differently, but generally they've been quite willing to say, you know, how the NDP and Dr. Bonnie Henry and others have worked on this. Something like COVID, you come together to support one another. And so, but when these intense moments pass, that's when, of course, the secondary issues, which move away from the primary issues, take over and you get partisan politics again.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for doing this, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
Every week here on Eye on the Valley, we cover a community group that is doing important work. This week, I'm going to be telling you about the Abbotsford Community Foundation. The Abbotsford Community Foundation has experienced steady asset growth over the years. This has come about through the generous giving of a number of people in the community, plus the establishment of several special funds by other not-for-profit groups and special interest organizations within the area. ACF's current endowment is over $12 million, and from 1980 to 2019, it has distributed more than $11 million in grants and student awards. These grants have been made to many charitable organizations for programs and projects in Abbotsford, related to education, culture, arts, sports, agriculture enhancement, recreation, and social issues like homelessness and poverty. In 2020, ACF will have a record year of granting, with $950,000 allocated for community granting. If you need support in Abbotsford, keep your eye on the ACF deadlines. $950,000 worth of funding coming in 2020. You can visit their website at abbotsfordcf.org. Thank you for listening to Eye on the Valley with Surjeet and Ali here on CIVL 101.7. We'll be posting these 45-minute episodes twice per week, once on Mondays and once on Thursdays. To keep up with us, visit civl.ca or canada-info.ca.